Creating a podcast takes a lot of time and money. So I want to take a moment to say thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you so much to the following homies who have donated to help keep this show free to air for everyone to enjoy. So thank you to Kira Reedhead, Abby Beale, Carolyn Mann, Jackie McNulty, Joanne Walton, Lisa Wheeler, Leah Bug, and Lisa, you know who you are. If you have found value from this podcast, please consider donating at www.eugeniekruger.com and click the donate button at the top. Thanks so much. Today's episode is a little different. I have been wanting to interview the amazing Mikhail Yakir on the show forever, but because I'm very new to her work, I didn't feel I would do the interview any justice. So I got my good friend, fellow homeopath and past guest on the show, Sarah Valentini, to interview Mikhail. Sarah attended a trituration workshop with Mikhail in Tenerife last year, which she absolutely loved, and she's very familiar with her work. My lovely editor, Margie, is editing and uploading this episode, so once this episode goes live, I am going to be listening to it for the very first time along with all of you, which I am so excited about. Sarah has told me that she'll be speaking in the interview about Mikhail's upcoming trituration workshop in Thailand from 25 to 29 November this year, which you can still apply for before 20 April, as the number of participants are limited. To apply, visit www.mikhail-yakir.de or check the link for the show notes. That's www.mikhail-yakir.de. Thanks for listening.
Hi, everyone. Today, I am speaking to the gorgeous Mikhail Yakir, who's from Israel, and we're going to be talking about triturations. We're going to be talking about plants. Oh, Mikhail is going to be talking about all of these things that she's completely specialized in. So Mikhail has a PhD and has taught in homeopathy in Israel and is an international speaker. And for many years, she was the president and speaker of the Israeli Association of Classical Homeopathy. She is a botanist and for many years was fascinated by the homeopathic implication of the dynamic order in nature, especially that in the plant kingdom. And from her many years of rich experience as a homeopath, as well as her knowledge and research as a former botanist and systems ecologist, she has developed her evolutionary universal approach as she continues to deepen, refine, and develop it. So Mikhail has written a book called, well, actually, calling it a book is actually kind of shortening actually what it is, because it is a huge tome on the flowering plants, and is working currently on the ancient non-flowering plants book. And my personal experience with these are books that I use in my practice. Oh, the first book is the book I use in practice every single day. And actually, I feel like the book, The Wondrous Order, actually helps to understand our patients more and see the plants in them more than any other system I've used with the plants personally. So I'd like to hand over to Mikhail as she can introduce herself a little bit more if I've missed anything. And today we're going to talk about the triturations and the relationship of the plant world to us. But Mikhail can share more about that. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Again, a pleasure. You know, when I was in Australia quite some years ago, I remember how awed I was by the ancient plants there, how they are just like mingling with other plants, and from mosses to ferns and all those cowrie and other ancient trees, which are just there, having those awful English name like English oak to a pine tree and things like that, which kind of raise my hackles because it is such wrongdoing for that. Because indeed, the ancient plants are incredible. And in the last 6 years, actually since the corona, I've been working with the ancient plants, and they reveal so much about health, about the evolution of people, where it gets stuck and where it needs healing, about the ancient healing that they bring and which is needed now in our time. And a lot of it was revealed via trituration. A lot of the talk I have with plants and with earth, because I'm very much interested in the talk of Mother Earth, of Gaia, I would even say. And during the trituration, the plant talk. And more than that, I found out that other homeopaths have been doing trituration all over the world, and they have sent me their trituration on ancient plants. They received the same thing. They just said, it seems irrelevant to homeopathy, so we never reported about it.
Wow.
It was like an extra information that it's not something about us. But I mean, we, even as people, we've been a bit self-centered. We're always asking the plants, how can you help us? What are you good for? Us. We never ask, what do you need? And during the trituration, because it's an immediate process, you can do that. Now, what is a trituration? A trituration is a process which was invented by Hahnemann. I guess it's related to the way pharmacy would have been like been going around at the time or practiced at the time, or medicine preparation from plants and minerals. And he called it trituration, which is basically a process where you succuss and dilute the material. And to this day, every pharmacist who gets an original material do it. And there is a very precise protocol to it. 7 minutes that you succuss, 3 minutes you dilute. Or if it's a material, you kind of, how you call it?
This grind.
Yeah, you grind for 7 minutes and then you scrape for 3 minutes. And there is, and then after 10, 20 minutes like that, you add another 20 minutes, another 20 minutes like that, and you arrive at C1. And like that, you can continue to C2, C3, C4, and some even get to C30 and more. And now, when the pharmacist does it, actually what they do is they do their best not to listen because they don't want to be influenced. They do it like in the past, they do it every day. And they didn't want to be influenced with all the multitude of materials they were using. So they closed themselves. But we found out Alice Timmerman was doing it a lot. And I got the information actually from a woman in Canada. And we learned that when few people sit together and they do the process intentionally. And so we kind of, like in all time when women were sitting and grinding food together, we are anchoring each other. And then if we just listen to what is coming, to what is being mirrored in us at the time, we don't chat. We talk what we listen, but we are kind of echoing each other, anchoring each other. A conversation is coming, which is utterly different from our everyday chat. And it actually reflects the plant. And how do we know it that it's not random? Because if you do it in different places in the world, you will get the same results or similar. Because, of course, men, if just a group of men will do it, or young girls or inexperienced homeopath, some things will come, will be different. Sometimes in the beginning, people feel more the physical. And it's an art of listening to yourself. And also sometimes it takes courage to say like, oh, I feel so sexy. I feel like licking my lips. Just 2 days ago, we've done a proving on a tiny, tiny fern, edder tongue, which asked to be introduced just now in these days of war. And that was one of the symptoms. And like, you know, one of the provers says, I'm a bit ashamed to talk about it, but I feel sexy. I want to lick my lips. Or suddenly another one developed Tourette-like symptoms and she started talking and having motions and saying things she doesn't mean. Oops. Now, the beauty about trituration is that when, the moment you finish it, and it could be 1 hour or 3 hours or 4 hours, you wash your hands, you put your intention to close it, and that's it. It's not a proving. But during this time, you get beautiful, beautiful information. And this information tells you about the plant. So the more we do the trituration, like 2 hours at least, 3 hours, and the best is 4 hours, because we found out that when you arrive at C4, the remedy kind of gets into resolution. It talks itself. And then you can continue. And again, it happens in the C8. Like every four, you get a kind of a resolution. So in the beginning, it feels like, oh, it's fun and it's easy. But the more you do it, you feel like, oh, it is taxing. It takes time. But instead of doing it in 4 months, you're doing it in 4 hours. Of course, improving, you can get other information. But most of the time, it complement and parallel. There is a lot of parallels between them. And I oftentimes collect and I'm asking, proving if I have, and we're doing a triturization about it, and we see how much parallel there is. Like the Edder's tongue, the fern we did 2 days ago, in the one proving, it says that it is related to the calcium cycle in the body and to the bones, and therefore to the back. And in the triturization, people had lots of back pain. And the issue was, am I in my center? Mm-hmm. Now, none has seen the plant before they were doing it. And both talked about, if you'd ever looked at how Edder tongues is looking, it looks like a backbone, which is amazing that they haven't seen it until we've finished. So it was amazing, the overlap and continuity of it and how each one complement the other. And above that, there was again the talk of Earth, which was beautiful. Earth is saying, acknowledge me. Don't think that I'm a jump start to the stars. This was Earth is oftentimes telling me. Don't turn your... Actually, we are the evolving aware part of Earth. And just as we can think that I can just trick my finger or the eruption on my finger and my whole body will be sick and still it will be fine. You can do that. You just can. Or that the warts will go, but the rest of the body is not important, or the rest of the mind. So we can think that we will be healthy, but we will leave Earth defiled and Earth and dirty and polluted. It's actually unreasonable to think like that. So the holistic wholeness of us is, right. And the ancient plants, who came from the time that we were still connected to Earth, from what we call an Eden state, are talking about it. And they say, now, before it will be too late, we have to remember that. So they came to us to remind us of how to treat elderly diseases like Alzheimer and Parkinson, which we see more and more even in children, and allow us to change and survive a possible disasters. Because they have survived.
Mm.
And in trituration, when we do a trituration for 5 days, I'm usually choosing a certain order. And we can see from day to day how every group is talking and what's the difference between flowering plants and non-flowering plants. And you can add your experience to that.
Yes, because last year I was in the Canary Islands with Mikhail doing 5 days of triturations, which seems like a lot. But as you say, yes, you can see, you know, the difference. You can feel the difference between each one, and each one has a little journey, and you go on that little journey for that day. And it all kind of illuminates that the family or the position on your table, or yeah, the ancientness of the plants, or where they're sitting in the current flowering plants. You know, I had such a great time with most of those remedies, actually.
Yes.
Yeah. Especially the Echium, which really kind of made me very cheeky and giggly and standing up and sitting down and then nearly lying down. And then we can understand the importance of that in the remedy as well, and really understand that when we see that in a patient as well, when we prescribe that remedy or any of those remedies. And it was so beautiful to, at the end, after we'd been on the journey with the plant, for you to speak about the plant and put the context of where they sit in the evolution, whether they're an ancient plant or a newer plant. It totally brought the whole thing even more alive than all the other experiences I've had with learning from you. So what I really loved as well with the ancient plants, and what I've learned from since that week in the Canary Islands, but also from studying mosses class that you've been doing as well, is really the context of how they sit, but I've been particularly interested because I work with a lot of children with autism, nonverbal children, or these children that seem to have this wisdom, but it doesn't particularly show up in the way that we expect it to show up in this day and age. And this is completely fascinating to me because, you know, these children are quite amazing and they're incredibly intuitive and a lot of the time really tuned in into the earth or into just their world because this earth can be too much for them.
Indeed, some of the ancient plants do speak of autism, diseases that it's kind of like seems unapproachable. Autism, disconnection, not having words which can be understood in our time. Mm. Someone who has a whole world inside himself, but he cannot transcribe it.
Yes.
And when you do a trituration and you understand it, and actually when you understand the table of plants, then one of the things that which is, it's very practical. I'm a woman and I'm practical. And I wanted to, when I've started the whole thing, it was interesting. I love plants, but I also wanted a way to memorize it. I have no ability to memorize Materia Medica, just like a shelf after shelf of information. Absolutely. It needs to have a sense. So when I heard Jan Scholten many years ago talk about the minerals and their order, I said, oh, I'm a botanist. I know that plants has order. So let me, and nobody could give me an answer. So I said, okay, being a researcher, I'll research it. I thought it's a simple journey. It took me 17 years to get it right. And I realized that it helped me also not just to give the remedy, not just to do a good differential diagnosis, but also to know where I want the case to progress, in what areas. Because let's say if you have someone who's restless from column one, let's say berberis or ranunculus, they're restless and a bit spaced out. So what you want them is to have a better border, say, able to say no to friends, able to say no to impressions that come in. But if they're from column six, and let's say they're chamomilla, what you want them is to actually to lessen the burden of the ego. You want them to be more open to others, less in themselves and more with others, and therefore this restlessness will abate because they will be more in tune with and have actually less borders, less weary and less observing. Oh, someone is touching my borders. No, I will never let it. You know where you want the case to go. Mm-hmm. Not just the symptoms to disappear.
Mm.
And understanding, every time we actually understand the system or understand something systematically, we get this gift.
That's right. And I think that's the amazing thing. When I started learning from you with the table and the book, and I was just like, oh my gosh, like now I can really see the context. It's not just a group of symptoms that sensation I might prescribe the plant. It's like, where are they in the context of their ego development or in their incarnation? You know, where are they?
Yeah.
And you can really kind of find them in that. I just wanted to say as well, like with the, when we were doing the trituration of Pinus canarius, that was the first day. It was really interesting because on that day, I think it was maybe C3, we all got to a point where we were all having a lot of trouble understanding each other. Communication. And we were all speaking in English. And yes, some people, English was their second language, but they were doing very well. But it got to this point in C3 where we were like, everyone was like, somebody would speak their symptom and then everyone would be like, what is she saying? Like we couldn't. We couldn't understand. So we're all in this state of with Pinus canarius, which sits in the ancient plant table, but we're communicating, but it's not quite landing with the other people. No, but we can't quite understand each other. And that was so highlighted in that experience. Oh, like these are the people that might be trying to speak, but they feel like no one understands them. They're not heard, or maybe they're not listened to. And I mean, that's a small part of the remedy, of course. But
you see, this is important. This dynamic, which happens in trituration, is important. And oftentimes it's not written. Because, okay, she's speaking, but actually what is happening in the group is part of the remedy.
Yes.
In when we did the triturition with this fern, everyone was identifying with the other. So if someone had a pain here, the other would start to scratch here. It was like very deep. If someone said, I feel that, I feel that. But it came that sometimes the other one started the motion before as she was speaking, before she even understood it. It was a very deep identification, which might lead to loss of your center, of your backbone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which make the physical. But you could see that in a triturization, you could see it doesn't take years to get.
Mm-hmm.
You get a lot of information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. And I think when you do the trituration, I feel like the resonance of that plant, the energy of that plant, the message of that plant, like it really lands with you as a practitioner. Yeah. You know, you can really go, oh my gosh. Like it's almost like, you know, Pinus canarius, it's in the same family as Thuja, but even then looking at Thuja in that way beyond just what we read in the Materia Medica is like, right, that it brings it all together.
Now you understand other remedies that you know.
Yeah, they're really big ones. So it's an incredible experience, and especially to do it with you, because bringing each of the story, bringing the table in and bringing the order that you pulled it together, it really highlights then the column as well, or the where it sits on the table. I really would love for you to speak about, because you've got the trituration seminar coming up in Thailand later this year, and obviously we're not going to talk about specific plants, but just generally about Thailand, about the botany there, about the plants.
So actually, I don't fully know the botany of Thailand yet. Yes. I will when I'll go. Before I go there, I will really study it. But they have in Thailand, because as Thailand is half tropic, then we have plants which survive there, or which are, you won't find in other plants, but you will find there. And therefore, we will have at least one venture into a nearby natural forest or botanical garden. And we will use those plants to triturate mostly. I think being in a real tropical area is a very nice experience, because it's like, again, where most of us came from.
Mm-hmm.
Life came from where it was easy. And tropical life are easy in certain way. So I believe we will get some answers or some solutions, some remedies that we can't have otherwise. And just as oranges, or which are eaten here in Israel, are not the same as those where you eat after they went through 2 months in a boat overseas. So seeing things where they grow and taking them from their natural surrounding, and especially in a place which has a different code of life from the West. And that's what I'm aiming at. Can we? Because sometimes we have patients which are different. And so being there would be like, indeed, in delving through the plants into the surrounding, I think would be a very incredible experience. And hopefully a year after we will do one in Australia.
Yes.
I really hope.
Yes. And
for the same tree.
Yes. Actually, maybe you could talk about, because I remember I talked a bit with you when we were in the Canary Islands about the Dane tree, but maybe you could talk about the Dane tree. And I mean, I know, because it's like a microcosm, isn't it, that it's been preserved because of the way that the air moves and the mountains are and things like that.
Yeah. So actually the Dane tree is a nature reserve. Because of the mountain which kind of protect it from the land and close it. And on the other hand, they have the sea. And the general, there is actually biofeedback between the mountains, the sea, and this preserved and protected area. It kind of kept itself as an almost as an organism over millions of years. This almost unchanging. But what was for me the most incredible was understanding how lives in this forest are entwined. How, for example, how mosses are important to the growth of others. Fungus are important to the trees because they decompose, and without them, the rain would kind of wash it all. How the sea is responsible for having fumes or ether coming back. There are, for example, certain plants, like there was this very, very itchy and irritating, it's not a nettle, it's kind of a climbing plant that if you touch it, you get itch for months. And it climbed on other trees. So you think, oh, it's bad. But no, actually, it protects them from munching animals because those animals will stay away from those trees. And there is a giant fig tree, which actually, when the bats eat the fig and they poop the seeds on, let's say, some trees, then the seeds, because it's wet enough, the seed will start to germinate. And let's say over 30 years, 40 years, it just sent tiny thread-like roots, which will, over years, will eventually get to the ground. When they'll get to the ground, it will start to envelop and cover the tree. And this will take it another 300 years. So when the ranger showed it to me, I started immediately to pluck it. And he said, no, you don't understand. This is essential for the well-being of the tree, of the forest, because they kind of, when they grow, they cover the tree and they have those enormous roots. They don't suffocate it yet, but they anchor it. Now, the daintree land is not deep. So having this anchoring root is essential because they said an unnatural forest that we like made and those fig trees are not there, then every 20, 30 years, there is a typhoon and many trees fall down. So he said, indeed, after 300 years, the fig will suffocate and cover the tree, the other tree entirely. But over these 300 years, the tree will stand and it will have possibility to bloom and shade seeds. So 300 years is much better than 30.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. What you think is bad is actually
right.
And there is so many lives like the, what you call the casuar, who eats the seeds of another tree. And this casuar is the only one who can eat it, digest it, and then it kind of take off the bark, not the bark, covers the seeds, the skin, and then it pops it. Mm. But it needs the seed too. They really love those trees. So without the casuar, this tree will not be able to live, but vice versa. And there was so many relationships between one to another. There was so many levels of the wood. And there was things that we didn't have time to investigate, like those shining in the dark fungus and all kind of things which are really, and as what the ranger told us, they're so ancient, they have answers that we don't have anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Medicinal answers.
Mm. Right.
And now, so they start to research it. But mm-hmm. we can in our way as well.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I know, you know, the Kakadu plum, for example, I mean, that's in the Kakadu, but in the north of Australia, but it's so rich in vitamin C, you know, that if we can use that as medicine. And yeah, the daintree is full of it. There is so much potential there. And to understand, I mean, I'm so incredibly fascinated by how preserved it's been and how ancient it is. So it'll be wonderful to go there and do that. Hopefully next year we can do that. That's what we're planning for. Yes. And I wanted to, if you could just maybe talk about, because so I mean, a lot of people that are listening may not know your table of the flowering plants, but I want to kind of bring this up because I have heard you speak about this in terms of, you know, we get to the end of column 6 of the flowering plants, and this is where we are now. And so I just wanted you to touch on that, especially as you opened out with how our relationship with it is with Mother Gaia currently, the humans that are living on the earth. But if you, yeah, I would love for you to kind of just speak a little bit about the context of that.
So if we would look at the plants, something like that, we could arrange them actually in botanical columns, the flowering plants. And the first one would be the ranunculales and the magnoliales, the ancient flowering plants, which has started their evolution around 120 million years ago. And then comes the oak family, the figs, and another group which start to create kind of a border. Then come the cactuses, the dillonids, which are, and the grasses, which are about standing in the center, balancing the feminine and the masculine inside you. And therefore, they are much related to the family, to pathology that goes through the mother line, to mother-child relationship, to feeling unloved in the family, all the family saga. And then comes column five, which again, those are simple, natural botanical, it's called subclasses, which were defined by the botanist Cronquist. So I haven't changed much. Then come column five, where the masculine elements start to be dominated, creating rigidity and laws and order and issue of work and me and the other. And then comes column six, which is our time, me and the world. In our time, it's the first time that humanity start to understand really how are we responsible for the world. I mean, 1,000 years ago, beside the aborigines and then one tribe in the Amazons, nobody thought that man is really responsible for Earth. We were like children. Now it's clear. Now things are being global. You could see it in the internet, like in the fact that we are talking so freely right now. Think of it. When we were children, you'd have to phone or write letters, which would take like 3 months to arrive. And now it's a few minutes, you're on Zoom. So this globalization, it's column six. What's my place in the world? Am I noticed? Am I not? Am I responsible? Am I not? Still under masculine quality, because the first columns are very feminine qualities, while the last columns are more masculine. Now, all this is part of Earth evolution. It's part of an evolution toward an awareness and love ability. Ability which is aware, which is conscious. So we start from baby love, I would say, where you are in love, but you can't choose. You have no ability to choose anything about it. To ability to choose, which is much related to the conflicts, to the political conflicts we see around. Because the only solution is if we choose love. There is no right and wrong. It's just about choosing love. And this process has started actually, I believe, from the very beginning of Earth. Now, humanity is the last stage of this evolution. So we see these stages. We see it as stages of where every quality is being developed. And we see it repeating like a fractal in the evolution of our society from a Stone Age to the Iron Age to the, what do you call it, to Roman Age, to the Christian Age, to the Muslim Age, and to our time. Mm-hmm. But of course, there were stages before that, but they were before humanity. So in them, Earth has just prepared. So we have stages there as well. And in a way, the flowering plants, this whole table, is actually the seventh stage of the ancient plants or of the land plants. And we are in the end of this seventh stage. So we're on the verge of the seventh part of the seventh stage. And this seventh part is in a way undecided yet, I believe, because it's like testing, would you be able to take us to a new place? Because that is what's required now.
Right.
Going for like, and it is a very difficult requirement because so far, if I'm looking at evolution, then Moses, 100 million years of evolution, big insect, 80 million years, dinosaurs, 200 and something million years of evolution, birds, another 100 million years. And we have 70,000, 200,000, that's all. Mm-hmm. And most of our evolution is in the last 12,000 years, actually. Mm-hmm. It is so fast. And we are so advanced on certain things, and we have actually given up a lot of things in order to get this fast. And again, the plants are telling us, here, regain this. Take back what was yours to begin with so that you could complete your mission.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. For me, that's the meaning of where we are going to.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of add to that, like, you know, in column six in the table that you can kind of see the environmentalists come out, like the people who might be environmentalists or feminists, they're really strongly there in that place. And we are a bit on the precipice of something else.
Yeah.
Especially in this new age and time. But the plants just tell such a beautiful and amazing story. Well, you've told the story of the plants so beautifully with the table and with understanding the evolution of how mm-hmm. they've come to be. So I'm incredibly grateful for this conversation and actually for all of your work, Mikhail, because it's something when I speak about it, I'm so excited to share it because it fits into place. You know, it makes sense. It makes perfect sense. So we would love to encourage anyone who's interested in doing a trituration to attend in Thailand or in Australia next year, or just generally following Mikhail's work because she's always teaching. There's many, many opportunities, and we'll add about those opportunities in the bottom of the show notes and with this lecture as well, with this conversation too. But thank you so much, Mikhail. So grateful, and we will continue to learn from you ongoing.
Thank you.